All right. Well, thank you so much, Kate, Michael, for having me here this evening. And I know some of you. I've gone twice to the Women in Zen, a retreat which I adore and really hope to do again someday. So starting point is 2013. I was driving to work. I teach Latin American and Canadian Studies at Langara College. And I was driving to work, and all of a sudden, trigger alert, driving down the road, and there's this car coming into the road. And the last thing I remember is hoping that we wouldn't collide as I slammed my brakes on. And I don't remember the accident, but apparently it was very loud. And my life changed that day. It wasn't obvious at first how serious of an injury I had, or rather how long-term the consequences would be. Every brain injury is different. Some people have much worse symptoms than I did initially and recover fully. And there's not a lot of correlation between the nature of why you get a brain injury and then how intense your symptoms are and how long you'll have them for. Soon after, I ended up in the hospital with the most intense headache, and this the guy there just recommended basically what my doctor had said, which was, you need to get in touch with GF Strong Rehab Center. And so I did, and one of the very first things they said was, you have to take up mindfulness. And it was amazing that they really were very clear about that. They were, there was like, this is what the evidence says, and I was like, sure there isn't some sort of treatment? I wasn't, you know, against the idea. My dad's actually a Buddhist, and I have been watching him meditate my whole life. But yeah, so okay, all right, here we go. I couldn't really do anything at the time. I was just literally on my couch with the covering my eyes, and one of the very common symptoms is a tremendous sensitivity to light and noise, and that has diminished tremendously. I still am sensitive to both, but extremely way less, of course, thankfully for me. But at the time, someone just stirring their coffee, like if you were stirring your sugar into your coffee, that was way too loud. That kind of level of sensitivity. And unfortunately, during the car accident, I lost part of a tooth and I needed to have a crown. So I had a 3-hour crown prep right when I was that sensitive to noise. So it was very, very intense. I had done a tiny bit of mindfulness, and all I knew was that what I had done was that I had really enjoyed nature. So it was early spring in Vancouver, and what I did was I just basically made love to the flowers and just really was so present with the flowers, and I had just taken slow walks, and I had no theory. I didn't know what I was doing. I just knew that I enjoyed nature. My BC loving nature body knew that that was going to be healing for me. And I also got connected with BrainStreams, which is the British Columbia Brain Injury Association's website. And I stumbled, you know, in my out of it state, I stumbled across a series of videos by an actor from Toronto who was a survivor. And she had made these videos about deep, long, slow, deep breaths. So she's talked about it at first in the first video, and then in the end, basically, she guides you through 12, 13 minutes of long, slow, deep breaths. Touch your heart. This was my first moment of the sweetness of the gathered mind. Probably not in my life. I'd been doing yoga for a long time. But really, in this intense... brain injury is a nervous system dysregulation disease. It's not just your condition. It's not just in your mind. It's your whole nervous system gets whacked right off. And so your normal natural fight, flight, and freeze protective mechanism gets on the fritz. And so you become much more reactive very quickly and easily. And so for me, it was showed up as anxiety. For some people, it shows up as anger. It's different for everyone. But so that's how I started, with just nature practice. I had been doing yin yoga for quite a while, and that supported me. And I hadn't really realized it, but by the teachers I had in yin were really teaching me mindfulness through the body. So I was kind of primed for that. That really helped. And it also helped because my yin yoga teachers at Unity Yoga taught me to modify yoga for my needs. So I already had a really strong practice of just doing what I needed, ignoring what the teachers said. And that really helped when it came to a more formal studying mindfulness. So one of the first things I did that G.F. Strong had recommended was to take the mindfulness-based stress reduction program, the Jon Kabat-Zinn's 8-week program. And it was kind of a disaster, I have to tell you. Like, it was way, way too much for someone with a brain injury. It was like the first class they had us doing a 45-minute body scan. And at that time, my body was like a live wire. Like, to pay intimate, interoceptive attention to the body. Well, you all know it's hard. It's hard when you're healthy. But when you go there and what you find is pain and panic, I couldn't do it. And I felt shame because, you know, other people seem to be able to do it. I just kind of ignored that part of the homework and did the other stuff. And then they'd say, okay, we're going to do awareness of breath. And they would say, okay, just notice what your breath and don't change it. And I was, well, of course I'm going to change it. If it's short and shallow, I'm not going to just let it stay short and shallow, which causes me more anxiety. So I lengthened my breath. I consciously, my practice was to have a longer exhale than my inhale. So I was controlling my breath, but it was because my need in practice was to regulate my nervous system. And so that's why I did. And then similarly, I would go on retreats. I've been to a lot of many, many retreats at the UBC Asian Center. If nobody's been, it's amazing. Wonderful, wonderful teachers that go through there through BC Insight. And we would do walking outside meditation. And again, I would just not really pay attention to my feet, but I would just pay attention to the nature all around, and then enjoying nature was my practice. So in many ways, I've kind of a rebel and doing things differently, but it's what I needed. And I had a very different focus than other people who might come to practice with a different goal or something. So I started having people to send me their cousins and workmates and anybody that had a brain injury. They could see it was helping me. And I don't know when it happened. I've been teaching for a long time, over 20 years at Langara, but at some point along the way, I realized I was onto something. That it was so important for people with a brain injury to learn how to be mindful and to practice a whole range of different types of mindfulness practice. And at the same time, it's like a double-edged sword, that if it's not done with some discretion, then people might give it a try. I had the wherewithal to just stick with it, even though I'd been totally dysregulated, almost to the point of panic attacks at times in practice. But I'd had those tastes of the nature and the flowers and the long, slow, deep breathing and the sense that this is really what I needed deeply. So I kept at it. And I just have been on this 9-year journey of, like, I feel like I've done a PhD with the reading and the courses and retreats and learning. And I'm just on fire with learning. I've loved it, and it's helped me so much with other things. So I also did trauma therapy related to the car accident and discovered some early childhood trauma that I needed to deal with. So it's been a beautiful healing journey, which continues. But somewhere in there, I got the idea that I wanted to teach. And it wasn't like I decided. It wasn't like I'm usually a planner like that, but it just sort of happened that was what I was called to do, given that I'd had this unique approach that nobody in the professionals weren't giving the prescription of mindfulness with a warning label that I needed and that other people needed. So I decided I wanted training, and I looked at different options, and I decided actually to go, ironically, to get training with the mindfulness-based stress reduction program, the one that I was, because actually at the time I wasn't quite as critical of it as I am now, and I'm not entirely. I mean, if you want to learn how to do formal practice, the MBSR is amazing. It's just not great starting point for people with a brain injury. So I loved my training. I loved my mentors and my teachers. The MBSR has a really strong element of inquiry. So you practice and then you share. It's like Dharma sharing, but a teacher to student. And it's beautiful and very powerful. And I'm not as good at it as I want to be in terms of teaching it, leading it, but I hope to get better in time. And so I got a designer and launched a website and started writing curriculum and thinking about what I wanted to share and developed a course and ran the course and have been teaching. And it's John Kabat-Zinn says sometimes you can have your karmic karmic something. Oh gosh, I forgot the name. Karmic project or something like that. And that's what this feels like. I'm making lemonade out of the lemons. and so it's been a beautiful journey, and in it, I've kind of developed a way of sharing with my students some core principles, which are really kind of trauma-sensitive mindfulness type of principles. And the basic first one is that you're in choice and that you can listen to your body and really learn to listen to your body as opposed to the override that we're used to. Learn to listen to the warning signs that overwhelm might be around the corner, and then pause, pivot, and proceed with what we need to make sure that we don't go into overwhelm, which is so common with a brain injury. And so many brain injury survivors are also trauma survivors. And I think there's a growing understanding of the link of those of us who end up with prolonged symptoms are often also trauma survivors from before as well. So it's hard to tease out what's trauma and what's concussion sometimes. So, but the basic tenement to my mindful concussion approach is to start by teaching people anchors of awareness that are the least likely to overwhelm. So starting with mindful eating, which actually sounds like maybe that would be so, and eating like a special treat, something that you really like. But then I found, you know, some people are so nauseous that they find that really hard. and mindfulness in nature. So essential, even if it's just in your neighborhood, enjoying your trees. Another important element is the world of mindful self-compassion, being really inspired by Kristen Neff and Chris Kermer. And also compassion practice and joy practice and gratitude practice. I have a little box and a little piece of paper by my computer, and every day I write something that I'm grateful for every day, on most days, and put it in my box. And I teach my students this too. And now it's coming to the end of the year, so my box is like overflowing with gratitude. And at the end of the year, I read through it and put it in little files and see. It's nothing I bought, of course, right? It's everything that's good and sweet. And and it's amazing that in the last couple of years, I think pretty much everyone has been suffering around the world in some way or another, and how lucky we are to have practice to catch us like a net, right? And one of the, as I said, one of the ongoing symptoms that I continue to have is reduced capacity to manage stress and cognitive fatigue. So I get brain tired of too much thinking, which is hard because I teach post-secondary. And a strong stress reaction. But thankfully, I have this strong practice to hold me in these 2 years, because 2019, my husband ended our long marriage. 2020, my mother died in a car accident. We were estranged, so it was different. And this August, my daughter left home, so I'm empty nesting. So it's a lot. And I'm really grateful for all these elements that I teach my students and that I call on regularly myself, and yin yoga and all of it. So I'm just grateful for all the teachings and all the teachers. And one day my friend sent me a note. She said, Jesse, I've heard there's these monks coming to Vancouver. And they were from Deer Park Monastery. And I went to a two-day retreat with them. Loved it. Learned that you can actually meditate lying down. I hadn't done that yet. And that's actually when I just love it. It's the best, you know, because it's comfortable. And with my body being uncomfortable, it was great. So I did that. And then I came back and heard about the Waves and Water Sangha here and went to that a couple times. And then I saw this poster that said, there's going to be, what did you write? It was like, throughout time, women have gathered in kitchens to talk. And I was like, ooh, I want to do that. So so that's how I found out about the Women in Zen program. And I really love that. And before I'm going to end with a bit of a poem that's related to the theme that Kate had said in the invitation about it coming up to the solstice. And but maybe I'll just say before that I yesterday I rented out my house for 6 months, and I'm going on a 6 month, it's not eat, pray, love, it's connect, meditate, walk, maybe depending on COVID. I'm supposed to be going to Wisdom 2.0 in San Francisco with John Kabat-Zinn. It's a keynote speaker mid-January, but you know, the border might be closed, so very much I don't know mind. And then I wanted to go to the back to Deer Park Monastery, and then in the spring to walk the Camino in Spain. So we'll see if any of that happens. I may end up in my dad's apartment, which he's calling it his cootie, that I can go to if need be, and spend the 6 months there. But this is my journey coming up. And I'm really excited because I was telling Kate, I've been very involved in the trauma-sensitive mindfulness community. I don't know if any of you know David Trelevin's work around that. And I put my hat in for this offering that he made recently, and he chose me to be of a handful of people that he's going to mentor this coming year for a whole year. So I'm really, really happy to be having that opportunity to work with him and deepen that work. So I'm going to share this poem. And this is from New Year's Eve 2015. So it's not solstice, but it's close this type of time of year. And so 6 years ago, I was almost 3 years post-accident, and I had just started to deepen my practice and just started to reduce my work at the college and really realize this is what's happening. I have to live my life. I'd seen a neurologist not long before that, and he said, Jesse, you got to live within what you can do. You can't live your life always pushing up against it. So I'd had to go back, working half time, and given up a big part of my career at the college. And so this poem's about that, and it's called Coming to Grips with the New Quiet Requiring Me. And I will say that I have made progress since here. Since this time, it's nice to reflect and see that I've come some distance. New Year's Eve 2015. I lay in the bath for some quiet time before a couple of hours at a loud New Year's Eve party. Some words came bubbling up. I feel like such a fool. I was in a car accident, not my fault, nearly 3 years ago. I thought I would be better by now. I am not. I can't handle too much noise, too much stimulation, too much thinking, too much stress, too little to eat, too little sleep. I have various post-concussion, post-traumatic stress, post-whiplash symptoms, but the main thing is that I get cognitive fatigue. I get foggy brain just like you do after doing too much, but I get it almost every day. There are not many full days since the accident that I have not felt it, and I am exhausted. I have good days and good hours, some very good, and I have done some amazing work, and I have done some fun things since my accident, but I have many bad days and many bad hours, and the end of the day is the hardest. I know it's difficult for others to understand my invisible disability, the coming and the going of it. Turn up the music really loud and shine a bright light right in your eyes. That's what too much noise and stimulation feels like to me once my brain is fried from doing too much. I need mindfulness, stillness, quiet. I want you to know that I feel like such a fool for finding this so hard. I'm one of the luckiest people in the world. Not everyone gets to hold their daughter in their arms or watches her blossom to an almost young woman, or has work that fills them up and pays them well, or owns a home in one of the most beautiful places on earth, or has traveled to 55 countries. I feel like such a fool for finding it hard to come to grips with this new me. The new me that has to work less, the new me that has to do less, the new me that has to pace herself and slow down. The new me that has to say no when she wants to say yes. But guess what? Yesterday, I took a mindful walk to Trout Lake. It took an hour and a half to do what would normally take 40 minutes. I stopped to soak up the glorious coast mountains bathed in snow. I bent down to gaze at the frost on a log. I breathed deeply over and over again, calming my mind and my soul. I walked very slowly down the little wooden path to the lake, and it made me feel high. I was mesmerized by the barren branches of beauty, and I felt more present, more content, and more alive, more me I want to be than the old me often felt. My mindfulness training paying off. I saw a glimpse of another new me, one who is calm and not stressed, in the zone, on the pad, one who pays attention, one who does good work, even if it is half time or less, whatever level it ends up being that she can handle it without feeling like crap. One who has energy at the end of the day for making a yummy dinner for her daughter, and one who has time for long walks, yoga meditation, and being fully in the moment. One who has time to be there for her family and friends, and one who makes giving smiles a form of activism. One who mostly accepts her limits and enjoys her quota of loud without pining for more. My hope on this New Year's Eve is that a year from now, I can reflect back and say that I am closer to that other new me, and then I won't feel like such a fool. Thank you.